It's time to laugh, learn, and take your photography to the next level with your favorite cowgirls with cameras, Kara, Kim, and Phyllis.
Welcome to the Cowgirls with Cameras podcast. I'm Kim Beer with Kim Beer Photography and Be More Business.
I'm Kara with Fast Horse Photography.
And I'm Phyllis with Phyllis Burchett Photo.
Hi, good morning.
Good afternoon, good morning, good day. Good day.
Oh, it feels like afternoon, Phyllis, but technically it is still really morning. It isn't even close to lunchtime yet.
Well, I was just getting peckish. It must be getting somewhat close.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say. Mind.
We've just been up for a long time doing this.
I was peckish as well. Yes, we have. We have.
Number three.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. So, yeah. Wow, our community is getting really cool over there. People are like digging in, aren't they? And learning stuff.
It's jumping.
Yep, it has been hopping. And Kim, I just wanted to say thank you for adding the functional business plan information that you put in there. Do you want to just mention it? Because I don't know, I thought it was really cool and I've been kind of picking my way through what you've got in there so far. And I think a lot of photographers out there would really love it.
Absolutely. So, you know, everybody tells you if you need to go get a loan or if you want investors for your business, you have to have a business plan. That's state one, right? But nobody is going to hold your feet to the fire and make you write one if you don't need one of those two things.
Most of us are pretty lazy about it too, I think. So.
Yeah. And I shared a pretty personal story in there about my history and understanding of why I think it's so important to write a business plan. And I'll share just a little bit of that here so you can understand. So I had a lot of businesses. I started actually getting paid as a photographer probably before I was out of high school. But my first kind of official, like, big girl business with a storefront, everything, was when I was 25. And I was very good at graphic design, and I wasn't so good at business because I really didn't know anything about it. I think at that point in my life, the most business I had ever done, or classes, like education-wise, was I took a business law class because I thought the professor was cute. So that was the extent of my business knowledge at that particular point in time. And it really did not bode well for me in that particular
I can't imagine
business.
Why.
Yeah, I can't either. A 25-year-old graphic designer, artist person that doesn't have a lot of commitment to anything in the world and just a basic business law education, because she liked the way the professor looked, and here I was, right? So it's no surprise at the end of the day, because I didn't go in this with a plan. I just kind of winged it, didn't know what I was doing. And that was one of the times in my life that failed miserably, and I ended up in a bankruptcy court. And so I was bankrupt at 27, 28 years old, and it was a spiral for me that I don't want to get into the amount of emotional problems that that caused in my life. But in the moment, I remember this judge at the federal bankruptcy court. You had to go in person, which I was terrified of. And then I had to stand up, and the lawyer had prepared me to answer questions from this judge. And the only question he asked me is, what are you going to do to never be in front of me again? And I said, I will never own another business, sir. You don't have to worry about it. And then I went back to my job in corporate America. I got a job with a company that I still to this day couldn't tell you what they do. It was all very confusing. And within about 2 months, I realized why that was worse. And so I went back to college and then ended up starting another business. And well, the rest, they say, is history. And I did keep my promise. I was never in front of him again. But the thing that made the difference, and the reason why I tell you that story, is the thing that made a difference for me was writing a business plan. And I wrote the original business plan that I wrote, the very first one that I did for Midnight Productions Incorporated, which I still have today. Be More Business is a DBA of that corporation. The reason I did it is because I wanted to get a loan. And when I went to sit with a mentor at the Small Business Administration, they had me write two business plans. So they don't do it for you. You have to do it. I wrote two business plans. I wrote one that we gave to the bank, which was a lot of blue sky and a lot of fluff. And then he had me write a second one, which was more realistic of a blueprint of how my business would actually proceed over the time. And although the goal was to get to the same end goal as what I gave the investors in the bank, the functional one was much more realistic kind of year by year. And to be honest, I've gone back and rewritten that business plan probably a dozen or more times since I've been in business. And as of late, it has become kind of a yearly ritual for me to write a functional business plan. This is different than what you give an investor. It is different. It has all of the great tools that you need, but you work it in a way that is for your business right here, right now. And it's a living document that should sit on your desk, and it should be there to help guide you in how you operate your business so that you're operating towards reaching those goals. And it's not an overwhelming document to create. And the little class I created for the community, it's not a great deal of like, you have to watch this video for 12 hours kind of thing. You're going to do it and then you're going to go do work. And it's broken down, and I created a whole template that basically is plug and play. You go through, you can answer the questions you answer. And yes, you're going to have to do some research. That's really good for you, by the way. Yes, you are going to have to think about some things that are hard. That's really good for you, by the way. I love my functional business plan, and I love creating them. And I think it's a fantastic thing to do for all business owners, whether you are a side hustle hobbyist who makes a few thousand dollars a year to you're going for the mid six figures with your photography career, or even more.
So something that I think to point out here, that this would have been super useful for the photographers that are in our community that were going for the Bossmer's grant, that was just the application that was just out. It has passed, but part of that was you had to submit a business plan.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
And you having that plug and play, like go in, it looks so good, and you put your information in there and you make it your own. But having something like that ready to go, like I know that the photographers, when they got to that part, were kind of like, oh, I didn't realize I had to do that for this application.
Yeah.
And they were kind of scrambling mm-hmm. to get that done. And having something like this ready to roll, like looks so professional. And I mean, I just think it could have been a game changer for some of them. So now when, you know, if Bossmer's or
next
any other
year?
Grant, yeah, anything comes
yeah,
out for them,
year.
If they can get on top of this, they'll be ready to roll, you know, when those opportunities come up. So that was just something I was thinking about. So thank you, Kim, for adding that to the community. It's super valuable, I think, to have there.
And even myself, who is a fly by the seat of the pants kind of person in my business, no goal setting, no business plan. I haven't been in there yet, but all the reviews and comments I've been hearing about your course, Kim, is like, I need to do this. Even I need to do this. Doesn't matter how long you've been in business or how accomplished or, you know, whatever you think you may be. It sounds like something everybody could really benefit from. So I think it may be this winter before I sit down and do it, but yes, I'm going to do it.
And that's fine. Yeah. And honestly, the first time you do this, it's hard. I'm not going to lie to you. It asks you to do some things you probably haven't done and think about some things you haven't thought about before. But once you have it done, businesses are ever evolving and changing. That's part of the fun of being an entrepreneur for someone like me. I know it's part of the horror for other people, but once you have this done, then it's a modification process every year. And if you want to pivot your business, it gives you a nice little roadmap and blueprint to be able to do that. So it's really worth the upfront time investment, because from here forward, it won't be as heavy. Like if subsequent years after I started doing this, it's a Saturday afternoon or a couple of weeks of thinking and making notes in a Saturday afternoon would probably be more appropriate. But it's not an overwhelming process even to start with, but it definitely isn't once you get it done. So yay. I'm glad people are enjoying it.
Yeah. Thank you.
So thanks for all your hard work. Yeah.
So today, speaking of business models and developing a business plan, one of the things that has happened that is very interesting in the realm of photography in general and equine photography specifically is that as our cameras have evolved, they have evolved to also be kind of a hybrid with a video camera. So now we're, as still photographers, a lot of times even before we did a lot of video, right? I can remember back in the early 2000s, I actually had dedicated video cameras and produced a lot of horse training videos, actually. So there was a video then, but now it's like everybody has it accessible to them right in a few buttons on most camera models these days. One of the things that we know works is video. And so this episode is devoted to how can you take those first small steps in adding video to your sessions. And Kara is going to lead us off here with this discussion because of the three of us in this particular technique, I think Kara has really excelled with being able to add the video into her business and be able to start incorporating it in ways that are really meaningful to both her business and marketing and to her clients, which I think is super special. I, of course, am the big geek in this group, and I love all of the technology. So I'm going to give you some little tidbits. It's going to be a little bit of a potpourri of some technical expertise that you may need to know in understanding to start adding video to your work. And then Phyllis is going to close us out by helping us understand some options around post-process and mostly around outsourcing that post-process, because that is one of the biggest stumbling stones I think that people come into when they start experimenting with video, is that that post-process is a whole nother learning curve. So that's going to be our episode for today. Kara, why don't you go ahead and kick us off?
So for me, when I started thinking about video, it was because I wanted to create content for my business, for myself. And that's where that came from. And I immediately knew that I was just underwater and way out of my depth of knowledge. So one of the things that I did, and I drug Phyllis into it as well, is we did a mentorship with Natalie McFarland of McFarland Productions. And we did a mentorship with her. We had her come to Florida and we hung out with her and we did a whole, what was it, a day and a half, 2 days with her, something like that. And we learned a lot. And it was kind of like the kickoff start for us. And then what happened with that is, I don't know about you, Phyllis, but for me, it became another way for me to be creative. And it became a little bit of a, like an obsessive thing in terms of, it was almost like a, it boosted my creativity. Like I was able to like, just be a little more creative and see the scenes differently. I think when photographers are thinking about, should they, might they, do they want to add video or start shooting a little bit of video during their photography sessions? Here are some reasons that I think they might want to consider it. The first one for me was what I've mentioned already. It just really allowed me to express my creativity in a new way. I could start bringing in some motion and some more storytelling elements that just gave me another option other than my still life images. So it was like a supportive piece to what I was already shooting, kind of to help me tell that story. I also am seeing a huge increase in client expectations and market demand. A lot of my clients, and probably it's because I show a lot of video now, a lot of my clients are now asking for both photos and video as part of their needs when they're booking me. So especially I find this in like the small business realm. So if I'm working with small equine equestrian based businesses, they are really looking for someone that can kind of be like a more full package situation. So they're like, I want you to be able to shoot stills, but I also need supportive video footage for content purposes or for marketing purposes. I'm finding that I'm getting a lot more requests for that in terms of branding, social media content, and just in that world of small business. And I feel like being able to offer some level of video services can help a photographer just stay competitive and meet their client needs. And I will be the first person to say that, you know, I'm not a filmmaker. I'm not someone that's out there creating like anything extensive. Like I'm providing at this moment really small, short form content pieces for my clients that they can put to work for their businesses. I think that it also can help increase business opportunities and help you stand out. If you're in a really crowded photography, equine photography market like I am here in Florida, it can help you maybe attract more clients and provide just a more all-around service. And let's be honest, video content, it also boosts your online exposure right now due to its popularity on all the different social media platforms and the search algorithm. So having some video content that looks really good for your own personal business, but also for your clients that you're working with can be really helpful for them. creating more versatile content is another reason why photographers might want to start shooting some video. You know, video footage, I have found that it could be repurposed in so many different ways and so many different formats on social media clips. You could use it for behind the scenes content, which I tend to do a lot of. And it's even really great on your website. If you have a YouTube channel, you know, you can do so much with these little clips of video. I have taken video clips and repurposed them in so many different ways and have been successful with that. I've even got video content now on stock sites that I'm having licensed for stock footage. And then the last little piece here is just, you know, in terms of improving client experience, I have found that being able to incorporate video into my equestrian portrait sessions has given me something really new to offer to my clients in terms of the overall experience. They love when I can do a video sneak peek of a behind the scenes moment that they had during their photo shoot and couple that with a sneak peek of the still image. And I also like to be able to take those video moments and incorporate them into their image viewing slideshow. So they'll go through their slideshow and they'll see an image, and then they might see a clip of them petting their horse, and then they'll see. So it just brings it more to life along with the music and the imagery that they see. It's always a fun surprise. And usually the parents and the grandparents just fall in love with that aspect of it as well. So I know that Kim's going to get technical with this next, but I would just say for any photographer who's thinking about doing it, you don't have to go big. Like, just start super small. And if you've got a portrait shoot coming up and you kill that scene with the still images and you're like, that was gorgeous, do it one more time for video. And it's so fun to start seeing how that comes out. Your footage is going to probably be shaky. You're going to make a ton of mistakes. But if it's a no pressure situation, give it a try.
I think for me too, Kara, another thing you were talking about, the creativity end of it, is for me, I think it not only improves the creativity, giving you another outlet for creativity, but I think it's helped me to think about things in a different way, even for my still images, because I think, well, that looks like video. And there are some things that just, you know, express better in a video than they do in a still image. But then there's parts of it that, I don't know. I think it's really helped me in my photography even. So for my still images. Sorry.
No, I think that's a very valid point. And I do think it's beneficial in all of those things. It starts asking you to look at things differently. And anytime you look at something differently,
exactly.
you see more opportunity. So I think it's amazing for that. I do think a lot of people get intimidated by video with the technical piece of things because it is different. It's a whole nother set of learning curve. And I believe in you. I know you can do it. And here's how I know you can do it. I met a wonderful man years ago at the American Royal, which is a big horse show in Kansas City.
Oh, I've been to that. I showed it that.
She showed it that. So he was doing a demonstration with his stock dogs. His name was Charlie Treyer. And I had a little booth set up for my photography in the arena. And I watched him. I shot him with his dogs. He was amazing. He's very, very good with the dogs and with cattle and stock and all of that. And at the end, he came over and he saw my booth with my photos in it. And he talked to me for a minute. And he goes, I've been trying to get somebody to make a dog video, dog training video. Would that be something that you could do? And I already did some horse training and clinician videos. And I said, absolutely. And I had never done anything like that. Like the things I'd done had been really, really minor. And I'm like, absolutely, I would love to. When do you want me to come down and do that?
You're so much braver than most people, though.
So this kicked off this huge learning curve of how to actually do video. And I did not set myself up for the easy thing where you plug your camera into the wall kind of a situation. No, the very first scene I shot for him was in the middle of an 800-acre pasture with him with 250 head of first calf heifers and four dogs. And yeah, I was on the flatbed truck. It was an experience. But I tell you that story to tell you that video was so successful that I do believe up until a couple of years ago when he had it like redone just because it was shot on very old technology was useful. And a lot of people got a lot out of it. So at the end of the day, yes, it's intimidating, but don't let it intimidate you because you can do it. You can do it. And you can say yes to the cool person who comes over and asks you to shoot a training video with his dogs. Which was a challenge, but it was all good. In the end, it turned out wonderful and it gave me a lot of experience. So first of all, most of these modern cameras have some way to do quick video. I know for the Canon R5, which I have, it has this little button on the front of it that you can just click the button and you can already do video. Now that video is, you don't have a lot of technical, like, you don't have a lot of control over the video. It's sort of done for you. Kind of think of it like shooting pee on your camera. And to be honest, if that's where you start in this process, I'm going to give you two thumbs up and tell you to go for it. Because in all honesty, it's really not that bad of footage. And for their first little steps into this, to where you're seeing where you like it and getting an idea of how to use it creatively, it works perfectly well. So if your camera offers you the simple press a button option, take it. For most others, you are going to have to do a little switching on the back of the camera to switch over into a mode that allows you to do video. So my first recommendation for you to start doing this is at home, and not under any kind of pressure of anything, discover how to get video to work on your camera and practice using it a lot. Like practice pressing the buttons, practice switching the modes, and actually get your camera manual out and read the manual. Now, if you've shot video with a dedicated video camera, shooting video with a DSLR or mirrorless is a little bit of a different process. And it requires a little bit of a different mindset to the process, but it's not so different. You shouldn't be able to adapt to it pretty easily. So if you've done video elsewhere, this process is going to be easier. If you've never done video on a dedicated video camera, I honestly think it will be easier for you to make the leap to doing video on your still camera, because it's more intuitive for still camera photographers to move to video on a tool they already know how to use. So a couple of things that you have to consider in this process is video is not like still images. Basically, what you're taking is you're shooting at minimum, generally, 30 frames per second. And because of that, you do have to have cards and equipment that can handle it. So we just recorded an episode where we talked about what goes in your camera bag, and we talked about cards and card speeds. You need to have the faster cards in order to do video. And also, video gets a lot bigger than still images. So we need to have cards that can contain video. So make sure you're set up to be able to do that. And yes, you can put video and stills on the same card in the same shoot, which is what all of us do. We don't swap out cards. We don't change cards. I don't think either one of you shoot video on a separate card in your secondary card stack, right? It's just right in there with all of your photos. So you don't have to have, you don't have to go to that extreme, but you do have to have cards that can keep up with what you're doing. Now, another thing I do want to say is that I know that there's a lot of vertical video in the world, but vertical video on a DSLR is somewhat problematic. It's not impossible, but it is problematic. Kira, do you shoot vertical?
I do both, but a lot of my clients want to have the horizontal option. So I shoot horizontally typically, and then depending upon what their needs are, I might provide them with multiple formats.
Okay. And it's, to me, it's easier to make a vertical video out of a horizontal one, and it's impossible to make a horizontal video out of a vertical one for most occasions.
That's
so
true.
You get the most latitude if you shoot horizontally, even though it might be something that you want to use vertically. There is a lot of short form vertical video that a lot of people are really wanting, because that's how Reels and TikTok and all of these new short form video apps are all vertical. When you're shooting, be mindful of that. And when you're shooting horizontal, make sure you leave a space, because guess what? In post-process, you can make that vertical by using cropping to make it vertical. Almost all of these new cameras have plenty of bit depth and resolution that you can certainly do that. Another thing I think that confused me a lot, when you have a dedicated video camera, it's kind of all set up for you. But here we have to be mindful of our shutter speed and our frame rate. And your frame rate, well, first of all, let me back up a second. Let me talk about different kinds of videos. When you go to get into your video, it's going to give you options probably for 1080p and 4K. So I think most of the cameras that are out on the market today, if they're relatively new, are going to be able to offer those two options. Some cameras are going to go ahead and go on up to 5K. The 1080p is the 1920 by 1080 resolution, and it is the most common for streaming content, smaller screens, older televisions. Like, for most of what we're going to do, for most of what you're doing with shooting this along with your client images or just making smaller videos, 1080p is fine. 4K gets up to 3840 by 2160, which is, it exponentially causes that much more data to have to be written. So it's a lot harder to do. It's a lot harder on the processor and your camera. Some cameras will overheat when they have to record at that high of a resolution. So just be mindful of that. And then 5K just simply compounds that. So when you're first starting out, I personally still use 1080p. Kara, you still use 1080p or are you shooting in 4K?
I'm getting ready to start shooting in 4K.
Okay. So you're moving up. What about you, Phyllis?
I'm in 1080.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to use both as an option, but I want to start shooting in 4K so I can get a little more creative with my footage in terms of like zooming things in and bringing things closer without losing.
Yeah. So again, what Kara told you and what I'm telling you is we're telling you first steps. So you don't have to start at 4K. It's going to be easier on your equipment and easier on you if you experiment at first at 1080p. And that's going to be perfectly fine for most uses that you're going to want to use this footage for. So the next thing after you get kind of that determination and that setting going, because it's going to ask you for that, it's going to ask you to choose a frame rate, and it's going to ask you to, you'll want to choose a shutter speed. So the shutter speed is actually a pretty easy decision. So the rule of thumb is you set your shutter speed to be double whatever the frame rate is. So if you're doing things at 60 frames per second, because that's typically what you're shooting, right, Kara? And it's what I've been shooting is 60 frames per second. Are you up to 120?
I shoot 120 frames per second.
120. That's where we're doubling it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on 120.
In my opinion, you want to shoot with as many frames per second as you can.
Well, that's the way we were taught was 120. So
yeah. So what that does is it slows the footage down. When you look at it in your camera, it will be kind of slow motion. And that actually works really well. So if you want to bring it back up to full speed, you do that in post. So you're shooting it at 120 frames per second. And remember, we want our shutter speed to be double the frame rate. So if it's 120 frames per second, we want to shoot at a shutter speed of 1/240th or 250th, whichever is closest in there.
250.
So that's what we're aiming for. And it feels weird as a still photographer to shoot at those settings, but it works. Any notes on that from either of you for that little technical piece?
Well, you're still setting your exposure with your ISO and your aperture.
Yes, exactly. So, you're using the rest of your exposure triangle to get the proper exposure, but it feels funny sometimes to be in broad daylight with 1/250th of the shutter speed. So, yeah. You're going to use your other tools in your exposure triangle to get that right. So I did tell you we were going to get a little bit technical here. So the next thing I want to talk about, there's also different ways, different types of footage that you can shoot in. I personally have been shooting in something called C-Log, which allows me to really color grade my images afterwards or my video footage afterwards. I really like how it turns out because it gives me a little bit more control. It's kind of like the raw version of video, kind of that sort of an equivalent. But it's also more complicated and you do have to do a lot more in post process. And I've also noticed my camera does a pretty good job with just plain shooting on the regular setting without going into the C-Log. So just know that's an option that you can stair step up into when you're ready to do that. And that leads me to a little bit of a discussion on video editing software. I want you to get started with this process. And if you have an Apple computer and you have an iMovie software, you can actually start with that or QuickTime. Either one of those is going to let you do some simple editing. Another tool that I can tell you that is free, that is fully featured, is a product called DaVinci Resolve. And I downloaded it. I used Final Cut Pro back in the day. That's how I produced most of my videos when I did video kind of a lot. And I liked the software. It's not that I left it. They changed it. And then I moved to Adobe Premiere Pro, which I believe is what Kira and Phyllis are both using when Phyllis does edit her own video. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Sorry, I was nodding.
Yeah, she was nodding.
For the YouTubers.
So yeah, Premiere Pro, if you have the photography subscription with Adobe, it's going to be an additional fee for you to add Premiere Pro to your list. And I think it's around $20, maybe a little bit more. I know Adobe has raised their prices recently. So it's going to be a little bit more of an investment in your subscription. DaVinci, the free version of DaVinci does pretty much anything that you're going to need. So if you want to dip your toe in it and kind of experiment, I highly recommend DaVinci Resolve. I was very pleased. I found it easy to work with, and I found a lot of YouTube videos to help me through it. Unlike Kira and Phyllis, I have had very little formal video education. I kind of make it up as I go along. Kind of typical of me, fly by the seat of my pants, totally unprepared. So DaVinci has been my friend. If you want something even simpler than DaVinci that you can buy kind of for a one-time fee, well, I think they even moved to subscription, is Camtasia. So Camtasia is really meant to be a screen recorder, and I use it a lot to record all of my classes that I teach in the community and other places. But it's actually a very fully featured video editing program, and it's a lot simpler than Premiere Pro or DaVinci, just FYI. And then Final Cut, if you're on a Mac, are also other options that you can utilize. AI has really gotten into helping a lot with video editing, and I haven't experimented a lot with that, but there are a lot of video editing AI tools out there where you can just basically tell it what you want it to do with the footage. And I think that's going to be the video editing way down the line. In another 5 years, I think we'll not have to know all of the tech that we have to know now. So I hope none of that scared you off. Both mirrorless and DSLR cameras are capable of this. So get your camera out, experiment, and start adding the video. And don't be afraid of the tech. Honestly, you're not going to break the camera and you're not going to screw anything up.
And do it in low pressure situations. Like,
yeah,
don't be like Kim and just take a job and go out there. Like, find a way to practice and play and have fun and do a mentorship with someone, or, you know, if you can. But honestly, like the way that I got comfortable is I would just slowly start grabbing clips at my portrait sessions. Like after I know I nailed the still image, I would just ask them to do it again for a quick video clip. And I'd maybe walk away with 10 video clips, you know, at the end of that shoot, but it built my confidence over time. Or come to one of our events and play with video. You know, do it in a low pressure situation.
Absolutely. That's a good idea.
And don't discount whipping your iPhone, your Android or whatever out and taking video with your phone. Because even now, if I want immediate gratification, I still go to my iPhone for video. So, yeah.
All right, Phyllis, what if they don't want to learn about post-processing?
Or what if they know enough to get them in trouble and don't want to continue? Like Kara said, I initially went to the same little course with Natalie that she did, but Kara took it to the next level. I stayed, you know, down at the bottom with my video work. So for me, outsourcing video production was a very strategic decision that enabled me to dedicate my time and resources to my still image, art sales, and client work, which were and still are my primary revenue streams. I determined for me personally that the learning curve for the video editing software, along with the actual time it would take to edit the footage I was taking, was not really a valuable use of my time. That was just for me personally. Initially, I only wanted to have video content for social media, but now I have started incorporating some video work into paid jobs. However, I still choose to use an editor for the completed projects. The pros of outsourcing video production are, well, number one, it frees up your time and resources, allows you to focus on your core business activities. It enables you to increase or decrease your production capacity as needed. Outsourcing also allows you to tap into the expertise of pros who specialize in these areas and typically have the latest equipment and software. Therefore, you'll get higher quality results. Also, external video production teams, or even just individuals like I just use an individual, can also bring fresh perspectives and creativity ideas to your projects that maybe you didn't think of or didn't know about, hopefully enhancing the final project for you. I think some things to keep in mind if you do choose to outsource your video production is careful selection. Look for reviews or referrals from other clients they may have. Research the person or company you're going to hire. That's a big one. Look for somebody reputable. This is, for me, a really big one, is don't just send your clips to them. Expect them to do what you have in mind. Really clear communication with your video editor is good to let them know how you'd like your work presented, with really detailed project ideas. After they work with you for a while, they will get a better understanding of what your style is and what's expected of them. At least that's how it's worked for me, because generally when you're starting out with somebody, they don't know you. I mean, it's good to get to know each other before, you know, and the longer you work with somebody, the better you're both going to be able to get that final workout. I think regular feedback throughout the production process just ensures that the final product is going to meet your expectations. I mean, for me, it's working. I would like to be able to have more control, but I know to do that, I'm going to have to learn how to do it.
I totally get that. I've thought about outsourcing for some of these content creation jobs where I'm turning over like just 50 80 tiny little clips, like just sending all of that out and doing like color grade, having them do color grading and that sort of thing. I haven't got there yet, but I love that idea. So I don't know. You're smart, Phyllis. Yeah. Just to go ahead and get it done.
I was just thinking I was lazy, maybe not so smart, because I just...
You know, I love to outsource for portrait edits, so...
Yeah. I'd rather be outside riding my bike. I mean, when I have the time, I'd rather be outside doing something fun than sitting in front of the computer. So,
yep.
But that's just me, you know. Not that it's not fun, because I obviously like to work on my still images. I'm still love to do that. But I guess because I already spent enough time in front of the computer, I just didn't want to add more to that.
I totally get that. Well, hopefully there's some photographers out there. And I know we've had so many that have hung with us and come to events and stuff that have asked questions and wanted to start, you know, just creating their own video content. And hopefully this will give folks just the little boost that they need to turn on their video and start playing a little bit. So
dip your toes in.
Yes. Getting their toes wet. So there are possibly at this point still a few ways you can join us out in the field. If you want to come shoot with us at an upcoming event, check out cowgirlswithcameras.com and head over to our events page. We have some options there. If you want to follow us online, we are at Cowgirls with Cameras on Instagram and Facebook. And don't forget, we have our new community, which you can check out for free and do a little free trial, which is cowgirlswithcameras.com community. So hop on and say hello, introduce yourself. We'd love to see you over there. We're having some fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cowgirls with Cameras. Don't let the laughter and learning stop here. Join our community on social media and be sure to visit our website for more opportunities to fulfill your photography goals. Head to cowgirlswithcameras.com. That's cowgirlswithcameras.com. See you next time.